You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Sunday, September 26, 2021. Capacity. OPEC's giants claiming ground despite uncertain crude oil market. Published by Bob Tippey. Producers of crude oil face historic insecurity about their market. Not only is there still uncertainty stemming from COVID, oil demand is also under pressure as governments and international organizations push to replace fossil fuels with energy forms free of hydrocarbons. Members of the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, or OPEC, face special challenges from measures taking shape to discourage oil use. Their economies, more than most others, depend on oil sales, and many members of the exporters group have limited sources of replacement income. Yet OPEC producers do not lack leverage in a market expected to grow at diminishing rates and eventually shrink. Many of them can produce crude oil much less expensively than counterparts elsewhere, and some of them plan to profit from that advantage by increasing output, even as the market flattens, and are investing to raise production capacity to get while the getting is good. In today's RBN blog, we look at capacity boosting plans within OPEC, explain why most members cannot take part in the effort, and describe how this developing priority might intensify market competition. Driving the transition away from hydrocarbon energy is, of course, concern about emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, or GHG, accumulating in the atmosphere. It remains uncertain whether aggressive decarbonization goals announced by many governments, including the US, are fully achievable. What is certain, as we have asserted in blogs such as The Air That I Breathe, is that efforts aimed at energy transition have been gathering momentum. That means demand for oil products, and therefore crude oil, could peak and begin to decline sooner than would happen if energy decarbonization had not become a priority, especially after the 2015-16 Paris Climate Agreement. Already, U.S. exploration and production companies are reining in their investments, partly in response to investors and lenders concerned about the future of oil. Some of the major oil companies, too, are de-emphasizing oil in long-term plans aimed at slashing carbon dioxide emissions. These are understandable responses to the uncertain future of oil demand. But it also makes sense for producers to want to hold or even gain ground in the market for as long as possible, one which, despite pressures to decarbonize, likely won't vanish anytime soon. Even with electrified transportation and electricity increasingly generated by solar and wind energy, the world will still need oil. They're not partying like it was 1999, but, with time left before the music fades, some OPEC members are adding production capacity. The United Arab Emirates, or UAE, for example, delayed an important OPEC production decision until the group accommodated the Federation's capacity expansion by lifting its quota baseline. As we suggested in Surprise, Surprise, the move will push production capacity closer to the center of attention in future OPEC deliberations. To varying degrees and in various ways, OPEC has aligned individual production quotas with its members' abilities to produce crude oil since the 1980s. But the benchmark has been country-level reserves, the volume of oil known with reasonable certainty to exist underground and to be producible with available technology at prevailing crude prices. As a central metric for policymaking, reserve is a malleable value, subject to fluctuation and reliant on interpretation, even fudging by OPEC members eager to elevate their production quotas. But it has served the interests of reserves heavyweights like Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and the UAE, whose leaders traditionally have sought to preserve the value of unproduced crude oil for future generations. Especially after the crude price crash of the late 1980s, those countries usually work to keep the market adequately supplied and prices below levels that might stimulate development of alternative energy forms. OPEC members with lower reserves have tended to favor more aggressive supply restraint, especially when other members made the production sacrifice. For them, immediate price elevation was more important than the value of crude at some indistinct point in the future, when their reserves might be at or near exhaustion. Especially when negotiating production cuts during periods of oversupply, OPEC has had to balance these divergent interests between members richly endowed with oil and those much less so. It's hardly surprising that group members with upper-tier reserves, with two big exceptions, more on that in a moment, are the ones now planning and able to boost their crude production capacity. They have what's required to raise capacity, substantial undeveloped reserves, money to invest in drilling and the installation of processing and transportation equipment, and investment climate stable enough to ensure access to outside capital when they need it. Most OPEC members don't meet all these criteria. In fact, analysis of undeveloped reserves suggests that six OPEC members face trouble clearing even the geologic hurdle, the one we'll examine most closely. To assess this requirement for raising production capacity, we look at reserves to production, or RP, ratios. Because dividing reserves by annual production yields a quotient measured in years, RP ratios are sometimes called reserves lives indexes and are taken to mean time remaining before resource exhaustion. But that can be misleading because oil fields don't follow formulas. Reserves estimates change as knowledge grows about productive reservoirs and production doesn't decline in a straight line as oil-bearing rock, the reservoir, depletes. Typically, a field peaks relatively soon after production starts, then falls rapidly before flattening later in its life and beginning a slow decline that can last for a long time. Also, output can jump during a field's life in response to techniques such as water or gas injection and enhanced recovery. For these and other reasons, a mature oil field, or a long-producing country with many such fields, can have an RP ratio of 9 to 10 for much longer than 9 to 10 years. Regardless, an RP ratio in that low range usually indicates that there has already been extensive field development and so there is limited potential to increase capacity by drilling more or installing surface equipment. Conversely, much higher RP ratios imply room for further development of existing reserves and, therefore, potential for net capacity hikes to the extent that new production offsets declines from existing wells. In Figure 1 in today's blog on the website, we calculate RP ratios for all 13 OPEC members with reserves and production data from the 2021 BP Statistical Review of Energy published in July. We use data for 2019 instead of 2020 because last year's production suffered from oil demand losses related to the coronavirus pandemic, making the prior year more reflective of long-term trends. The table shows reserves estimates, A, divided by the product of daily production, B, multiplied by 365, which yields annual production, C, to derive RP ratios. The RP ratio range among OPEC members is huge, from Angola's and Equatorial Guinea's 15 to Venezuela's whopping 925. We should point out that Venezuela's RP ratio is distorted by production suppressed by the economically beleaguered country's inability to invest in its oil fields and by inclusion in its reserves number of heavy oil in the mostly undeveloped Orinoco Belt. Subtracting Orinoco reserves of 262,000 million barrels leaves conventional reserves of 41,800 million barrels and lowers Venezuela's RP ratio to a still high 127. That happens also to be the RP ratio of Iran, another country with high reserves and suppressed production, in Iran's case by international sanctions limiting exports and oilfield investment. Venezuela and Iran are the two countries mentioned earlier that, because of investment restrictions, are unlikely to raise production capacity soon despite their high RP ratios. For countries with low RP ratios, raising capacity is not impossible, but the resulting production increments probably would not be large. An alternative, not practicable on a large scale for many of the low RP countries, is to find new fields or extend existing fields through costly and risky exploration and development. Five OPEC members that are expected to raise production capacity in the next few years all have RP ratios in the upper end of the group's range. In its Oil 2021 report published in March, the International Energy Agency, or IEA, projected production capacity changes for each OPEC member over 2020 to 2026. Four countries, Congo, EQ, Guinea, Gabon, Iran, have no projected changes. All countries with production capacity expected to increase through 2026 have RP ratios higher than 65. Among countries with capacities expected to fall or remain unchanged, Nigeria has the highest RP ratio, at 48. As we mentioned earlier, an abundance of undeveloped reserves is not the only requirement for production capacity increases. With its comparatively stout RP ratio, for example, Nigeria should be able to lift its ability to produce crude. But the country faces challenges attracting all the new international capital it needs because of security concerns and an unpredictable regulatory regime. As a corollary, the 200,000 barrels per day capacity increase projected for Libya depends on continuation of recent progress towards stability after a decade of civil war, which disrupted oil production and exports. Some of the other projected capacity increases derive from events unassociated with deliberate investment. Those of Kuwait and Saudi Arabia at least partly reflect the restart last year of production from shared neutral zone fields along the country's border, idle for several years because of a dispute. Saudi Arabia nevertheless has been bringing new fields and field expansions on stream recently to offset depletion in old fields and keep capacity at 12 million barrels per day. Among mega projects in this effort is the giant Manifa field, which can produce 900,000 barrels per day through wells drilled from 27 artificial islands linked by 41 kilometers of causeway. Saudi Aramco now is conducting engineering studies to raise production capacity to 13 million barrels per day. Meanwhile, the UAE intends to add capacity beyond the end of IEA's forecast range, taking its total to 5 million barrels per day by 2030 from about 4 million barrels per day now. Kuwait plans to add capacity beyond the boost from restart of neutral zone fields, targeting 4 million barrels per day by 2040 compared with 3.1 million barrels per day now. And Iraq, where capacity expansion has been hampered partly by export bottlenecks, is expanding its Basra and Khor Al Amaya ports and this month signed a contract worth an initial $10 billion with Total Energies for four major energy projects in the Basra region. One of them is the long-delayed Khaman Seawater Supply Project, which will boost water injection in southern Iraqi oil fields in a development crucial to plans for raising output capacity from 4.9 million barrels per day now to 7 million barrels per day. One final point on OPEC, their production costs tend to be among the lowest for global producers. For example, lowest-cost supplier Saudi Aramco says it produced crude oil last year at an average upstream cost, lifting outlays plus capital expenditures, of $7 per barrel. Additions of low-cost production capacity, coupled with the incentive to not let investments sit idle, will tend to keep supply flowing into a market with flagging growth prospects, intensifying competition and suppressing crude prices. Higher-cost suppliers, including some in the U.S., are likely to feel the squeeze. The emerging prominence of production capacity represents movement by OPEC's reserves giants away from generational production strategies in deference to near-term planning horizons. Investments in the new wells and infrastructure essential to capacity increases have definite lives, defined by depreciation and depletion schedules, and they're usually much shorter than the lives of reserves expected, correctly or not, to last for generations. OPEC countries investing billions of dollars to boost production capacity will want to use it, or most of it, in the case of Saudi Arabia, which tries to hold 2 million barrels per day idle as a market buffer. Those countries are preparing to accelerate the monetization of their oil reserves as the market's outer boundaries assert themselves in decision-making. They are embracing new incentives to produce oil sooner rather than later. And they are staking claims in an ultimately compressed and therefore increasingly competitive crude oil market, in which the low-cost supplier, Saudi Aramco, says it produced crude oil last year at an average upstream cost, lifting outlays plus capital expenditures, of $7 per barrel. Capacity was written by Eva Hendricks, Sam Hendricks, Spencer Fox, and Dan Shore or Charlie Bliss. The song appears as the second song on Charlie Bliss' second studio album, Young Enough. It was released as a single in February 2019. Lead singer Eva Hendricks describes the song as about wanting to kill your inner people pleaser. Personnel on the record were Eva Hendricks on lead vocals and guitar, Spencer Fox on guitar and backing vocals, Dan Shore on bass and backing vocals, Sam Hendricks on drums, and Joe Ciccarelli on programming. Young Enough was recorded at Sunset Sound in Los Angeles and Brooklyn Recording in New York City. Produced by Joe Ciccarelli, the album was released in May 2019. It went to number 4 on the Billboard Heat Seekers and number 80 on the Billboard 200 Albums charts. The LP featured a more pop-oriented sound than their debut album, Guppy, which was released 2 years earlier. Three singles were released from the album. Charlie Bliss is a power pop band formed in Brooklyn, New York in 2011 by Eva Hendricks, Spencer Fox, Sam Hendricks, and Dan Shore. The band lists its influences as Weezer, The All-American Rejects, The Killers, and Kate Bush. They have released 2 studio albums, 3 EPs, and 11 singles. The band continues to record and tour.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.